Every Christian Scientist must understand, and does understand, that when the word heal is used in Christian Science, it does not mean to heal someone or something, for there is nothing to heal with God as all in all. Thus healing in Christian Science simply means conscious oneness with God, and the efforts to bring about this oneness are not based on its absence, but are merely the refutation of the negation and the translation of it back to its original fact of good as all the isness there is. You know that every thought and every act will be brought into judgment. Can you be a mathematician without facing tests on every rule? The understanding of Christian Science demands no less. Then why make excuses? Why think that anything as a test of your sincerity and understanding can take the place of healing the sick and heavy laden? In miscellaneous writings it is stated, less teaching and good healing is today the acme of well done, a healing that is not guesswork, chronic recovery, ebbing and flowing, but instantaneous cure. This absolute demonstration of science must be revived. If you are not healing, not seeing and feeling God as all in all, get immediately into your closet and there alone with mind, ask what is stopping you and arouse yourself to resist this hidden mental foe which declares you do not understand God. The incessant argument is that you cannot heal, that you cannot know God, that you do not know how to heal, how to understand Him. Then the argument continues, calling its lies laws of matter, of nature, anatomy, physiology, heredity, hygiene, theosophy, spiritualism, astrology, false theology, and so on, also laws of wish, rule, inclination, desire, hatred, anger, endless would-be laws. All these are simply the negation of divine mind and its activity and melt away under the lens of truth. Thus evil argues incessantly. Are you accepting its argument? You know that nothing can stop you from healing because whatever you affirm that is true, even if to all human reasoning or sight it may not seem true at all, still it will come to pass. It could not be otherwise since all is infinite mind and its infinite manifestation, as science and health declares, and since good is, not will be. To you, body means embodiment. You do not think of body as just a conglomeration of atoms weighing a certain number of pounds. You think of it as the full interpretation of mind to you. In your healing work in Christian Science, consider carefully this statement which Mrs. Eddy made to some friends. What thou needest to know is that mortal mind has translated the body and its functions into matter, and immortal mind gives back the original with the functions preserved and harmonious, but not as not in matter, but as and of mind. By the phrase, not as not in matter, is meant that mind does give back the original body and its functions preserved and harmonious in that which may seem to you to be matter, but which is really mind. There can be no limitation because all is mind, not matter at all. You may think good appears materially as health, security, position, and other seemingly advantageous conditions. However, regardless of the appearance, you would not be aware of even a sense of good if it were really material, if it were matter as such. Affirm on the side of that which is true, and the true will supply you with all good, and will give back the original, free from limitation. In other words, will give back body, not without functions, but with its functions preserved and harmonious, but not as not in matter, but as and of mind, in the positive language that you can best understand. Compel yourself to stop doubting, quibbling, and questioning, and begin to work. Exercise the will of God. It will operate every time, for whenever you reach out to the beyond for the real, you instantly express it. That which is real, that which is true, is not in the process of coming. It is already here. That applies not only to health, but to the fulfillment of all good, regardless of the need or the occasion. The answer is here, present every moment. Then reject with equal insistence the perpetual lying insistence of the mental malpractitioner that evil is the reality. You are not afraid to use the will of God. As the man of God, the voice of God, you declare, "Here I stand, and evil has no power." So shall my word be that goeth forth out of my mouth. It shall not return unto me void, but it shall accomplish that which I please, and it shall prosper in the thing whereto I sent it. Because I have brought out so strongly the necessity of using your will in facing the work that lies before you, I would like to repeat to you a little poem called Consecration. This poem is anonymous, but Mrs. Eddy evidently thought highly of it, because she asked to have it published in the Christian Science Journal of October 1900. Obviously, it is not wholly metaphysical, but it is easy to comprehend why she thought it worthy of publishing, for it is filled with the right understanding of willpower and is worthy of your most thoughtful consideration. Consecration. Laid on thy altar, my Lord divine, accept my gift this day for Jesus' sake. I have no jewels to adorn thy shrine, nor any world-famed sacrifice to make. But here I bring within my trembling hand this will of mine, a thing that seemeth small, and only thou, dear Lord, canst understand how when I yield thee this, I yield my all. Hidden therein, thy searching eyes can see struggles of passions, visions of delight, all that I love or am or fain would be, deep loves, fond hopes, and longing infinite. It hath been wet with tears and dimmed with sighs, clenched in my grasp, till beauty it hath none. Now, from thy footstool, where it vanquished lies, the prayer ascendeth, "Oh, may thy will be done." Take it, O Father, ere my courage fail, and merge it so in thine own will, that e'en if in some desperate hour my cries prevail, and thou give back my gift, it may have been so changed, so purified, so fair have grown, so one with thee, so filled with peace divine, I may not know or feel it as my own, but gaining back my will, may find it thine. Notice how, in gaining back your will, you may not know it or feel it as your own, but find it thine. You find God's will as your will. Use it then. Do not act as though you were helpless, but use this will of God, and you will be turning directly to God and God alone to find out what His will is. You will never deal with effect, but will always start with cause. You know that to begin with effect is to yield yourself to the enemy of mankind and aid and abet the willfulness of evil, malicious mental malpractice and its tools. You start first with God, divine mind, and find Him the source of all that appears. You cannot then malpractice, but will bless mankind. This is what is meant when science and health says, Your true course is to destroy the foe and leave the field to God, life, truth, and love, remembering that God and His ideas alone are real and harmonious. May I now leave with you a statement of fact and an exhortation from Mrs. Eddy's miscellaneous writings. Christian Scientists cannot watch too sedulously, or bar their doors too closely, or pray to God too fervently for deliverance from the claims of evil. Thus doing, scientists will silence evil suggestions, uncover their methods, and stop their hidden influence upon the lives of mortals. Rest assured that God, in His wisdom, will test all mankind on all questions, and then, if found faithful, He will deliver us from temptation and show us the powerlessness of evil, even its utter nothingness. How malicious mental malpractice seems to come into being. In order to understand in a practical way the subject of malicious mental malpractice, the negation or suppositional opposite of Christian Science practice, it is necessary to understand its suppositional origin, just as it is essential in order to understand Christian Science to know firstly that there is God, secondly, what God is, and thirdly, to know what He is God to and the laws by which He operates. No Christian Scientist would think it possible to intelligently continue his study of Christian Science without first being well grounded on these fundamental points. In order to think and act with unbounded confidence, the Christian Scientist knows that he must have a reason for the faith that is within him, and that that reason can only be completely satisfied as every step in the process of establishing its structure is taken intelligently. Thus, in proving that God is, he starts with that which he knows of himself without any external testimony, namely, his own consciously being, and from this he instantly is assured that he could not consciously be if consciousness were not first the fact. Thus he establishes that consciousness is, and from this isness he goes on to find that consciousness is all in all, since there could be nothing outside of that which is. He further learns that this consciousness, being all, embraces within itself all being, with all that this term implies. Thence, he goes on to discover that this consciousness, in order to be consciousness, must be conscious of something, and he names that something that consciousness is conscious of, idea, man, or any term that he chooses whereby to express effect. The term or name is unimportant, but whatever term is used, it means that whereby consciousness is made known. Because this consciousness is necessarily mind, intelligence, that which knows, it expresses itself as law, order, and so forth. The student of Christian Science continues this reasoning until there is not the slightest doubt or question left in his mind that not only is there God, but that he must, in order to be God, embody within his own infinity all life, truth, substance, being, etc., together with that which he is God to, with his accompanying laws. Being all in all, his allness must necessarily include all. This allness means oneness, and therefore there is nothing apart from him. He is both noumenon and phenomenon, God and all that God is God to. The Christian Scientist knows he cannot understand God without this sound foundation, which gives him a reason for the faith that is within him. In exactly the same way, in order to comprehend this subject of malicious mental malpractice, he must see just what it is, how it arises in belief, and all that there is to it, or he will not understand it and be able to handle it, For as Mrs. Eddy states in Miscellany, we cannot do more than we are, nor understand what is not ripening in us. What man is always what he understands, and that is what he can use and prove is his own. Then let us look at this subject of malicious mental malpractice simply and intelligently. First, how does it come into seeming being? Given the fact that God is, that truth is, there instantly arises, by implication, the suppositional opposite of it, just as with the presence of any intelligent statement, there arises, by implication, the ignorance with regard to that statement. The ignorance is merely the false in contradistinction to the true, even as the lie is in contradistinction to the fact. A lie is not anything of itself. It is the negation of the truth. No mind is required to suppose it. It appears as the result of the law of opposites, coming as the negative accompanying the positive suppositionally and spontaneously disappearing with the acknowledged presence of the real or positive, in other words, being clothed upon by the reality. This supposable condition exists not because of a so-called mind supposing it, but by virtue of the law that every truth includes within itself, by implication, the concept of its own opposite. This is the law of opposites. To illustrate this point, is it not obvious that is, being is, because its seed is in itself, alone determines itself, and so implies that anything outside itself, outside that which is, must necessarily be, is not. In other words, every truth, by virtue of its own isness, hence allness, carries within itself the contradiction of the lie about itself. Thus we get malicious mind as the suppositional opposite of divine mind in all its minutiae, and yet without the faintest real existence of itself. We call it malicious because that which it negates or is the suppositional opposite of is the mind that is infinite life or good. It is necessarily mental because all supposition is mental or mind with a small m. Everything that the one mind is in all its infinity of perfection, the suppositional opposite must simulate in exact opposition. The suppositional opposite has no ability independently to declare itself, but by its very nature, it automatically falls in line as the negation of that which is, and it borrows its entire suppositional presence and action from that which is, even as any lie depends for its existence on the presence of the truth about which it is the lie. Just as mind is, and is all that is, hence one in the realm of the positive, just so malicious mind is suppositionally all that is, and is one in the realm of evil, or the negation. Further, just as divine mind, the one spirit, has that whereby it is shown forth, which we call spiritual being or spirituality, so malicious mind has that whereby, in belief, it is shown forth, namely, material being or materiality, which of course must be and is just as mental as the offspring of supposition would necessarily be. This material being or materiality appears and is called mortal man, place, or thing, but it is never more than the erroneous or suppositional opposite concept of that which divine mind and its divine man, place, and thing is, wholly pure and perfect. By means of this so-called suppositional mortal man, place, and thing, malicious mind appears to act and operate, and it can never act or operate except as such mortal man, place, or thing, since cause, whether genuine or suppositional, must have its effect whereby to proclaim itself. But does this mean that malicious mind has any power of its own to harm anyone? No, for its entire presence and power, being a suppositional presence and power, it merely declares the real presence and power of that about which it is the lie, and so, when reversed, testifies to the ever-presence of divine mind. To use Mrs. Eddy's statement in Unity of Good, the use of a lie is that it unwittingly confirms truth when handled by Christian Science, which reverses false testimony and gains a knowledge of God from opposite facts or phenomena. However, this negation or suppositional mind must, by its very suppositional opposite nature, assume in belief all that God is, together with all his power, authority, and law whereby to act, etc. It is as such supposition that we must view this lie. It usurps the role of God and claims to be very mind, and therefore to be your mind, thinking and acting for you to the minutest details of your daily life. It uses the lie about every law and activity of God as its law of activity, and does this all with the suggestion that I am of God, for God made me. In fact, I am God, truth. We have seen, however, that the only sense in which God made it is in the sense that God, through his isness, must imply his suppositional opposite is not. The is not, by reversal, declares is, and thus shows forth God's absolute allness both negatively and positively, so that God may truly be all in all. Having now seen just how malicious mind arises as supposition, we can readily go on to following it through in all its seeming complications of evil, and yet, without giving to it one atom of power or reality of its own, but ever turning all back to the one mind from which all is. One point should be consistently borne in mind, and that is that the supposed channel or avenue whereby malicious mind seems to appear is never of any moment in the final analysis, that it is but the puppet of the supposition it is expressing, even as the divine man of God is in reality nothing of himself, but is that whereby God is seen and known. In handling malicious mental malpractice, it is so-called cause that is always dealt with, never so-called effect. The foregoing is preliminary or introductory to the pages which follow, where these points will be repeated in many different ways over and over again. It seems eminently sensible, however, before going thoroughly into the subject of malicious mind and its so-called malicious mental malpractice, to fortify oneself with a clear understanding as to just how malicious mind originates in belief and what it signifies. Then, at no point in its uncovering will it be thought of for one instant as being anything but the suppositional opposite or negation of that which is, of God and his allness, and therefore as that which, when reversed, declares the allness of good. Definition of beast, false prophet, dragon. One good way to understand the manner in which malicious mind operates, appearing always as effect, is to study what John had to say on this subject in the book of Revelation. This book was dictated to John by Christ Jesus, and may therefore be taken as a statement of absolute metaphysical fact. John recorded it in symbols, but as soon as these symbols are translated into ordinary speech, they will be found to be very enlightening. According to John's allegory, there were two forces of evil, which claimed between them to rule the world, and to be able to destroy anyone who did not worship them. The first, a physical power, was called by John the beast, and the second, a mental power, was called by him the false prophet. These two terms stand for materiality and for mentality. But according to the allegory, and this is the point to be noted, neither of these two phenomena has the slightest power of its own. They have great authority only because it has been given to them by the third figure in the allegory, the dragon. John defined the dragon as that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world. The dragon is therefore a hypnotic mental deceiver, or in other words, malicious mental malpractice. It is the insistent mental argument that appears to the Christian Scientist and says, God is not all. You have a separate mind of your own, and I can manipulate this in such a way as to make you believe in what does not exist. I can make you believe in both the beast and the false prophet, my servants, who owe their power only to me. These two servants of the dragon, the beast, and the false prophet, stand for the whole of the apparent world. The beast is the belief in many bodies, and the false prophet is the belief in many minds. Many bodies means limited bodies, and all that the term implies in the way of sickness, death, lack, laws of physiology, etc., comes under this heading. The belief in many minds is the other aspect of this same belief in limitation and produces religions, governments, fears, and all forms of good and evil mentality. Between them, these two symbols make up the sum total of outward manifestation or effect through which the one evil or dragon operates. In the same way that God, the one cause, always appears to you as effect in the language that you can understand, so in the same way the dragon, the supposititious opposite of God, appears to you as effect also. Remember, however, that it never is effect. It appears only as effect and is always really the same old dragon. Allow yourself to be misled and handle either the beast or the false prophet, physicality or mentality, instead of the dragon, hypnotic suggestion, and you will be helpless before it. Suppose, for instance, you see a man lying in the street with a broken leg. No one is responsible for this appearance. No one invented it or put it there. It came there through the beast. The idea that there are a lot of separate, limited bodies, all obeying various laws of growth and destruction, and no one invented the beast either. The beast came there through the dragon, and the dragon antedates man because it is exactly as old as the reality of which it seems to be the reverse. As Mrs. Eddy so clearly points out in Retrospection and Introspection, sin existed as a false claim before the human concept of sin was formed. Hence, one's concept of error is not the whole of error. The sinner created neither himself nor sin, but sin created the sinner. There was a time when you were beginning your study of Christian Science when it was enough to attack the beast. It was enough to declare there was no life and substance in matter, to produce a complete healing. The man in the street got up and walked away quite happy. This, however, was strictly dealing with effect. It did not touch the basic lie, and the beast could appear in a different way tomorrow. The mortgage could be foreclosed, or the tire could blow out and wreck the car. Obviously, a struggle of this kind would have no end to it, no matter how conscientiously and earnestly the Christian Scientist continued to deny the reality of matter. This watchfulness was enough in the beginning, as a knowledge of the rule of fractions is enough, when you are studying fractions, but it did not touch the fundamental point. There was no final victory because it was an effect that was being fought, not a cause. The effect, in spite of the multitude of its ramifications, is a comparatively simple open thing. The cause, the dragon, on the other hand, is extremely subtle. It stands in the holy place and calls itself mind, my mind. Naturally, it does this. It is imitating the one cause, the one consciousness, the one mind. And anything it can do to convince you it is your mind, it will naturally do. It claims for itself infinite subtlety and strength as the supposititious opposite of the one wisdom and strength, and it will use all this to persuade the Christian Scientist it is his mind. His business, of course, is to reverse it, because reversed, it really is his mind. Unreversed, it is nothing at all, and all the names given it are only the names of a supposition. But it is a supposition that claims for itself the power and dominion as long as it is believed in as something real. Now suppose, instead of the beast, materiality, making its appearance in the guise of a broken leg, we have the false prophet making an appearance instead. The claim of the false prophet is that the world is full of people, men, women, and children, who are thinkers, and that their minds can operate on each other or on themselves for good or evil. In this case, it does not exhibit a man lying in the streets with a broken leg, as the beast did. It appears, perhaps, as a man working hard mentally to destroy forces which he has been told by an ecclesiastical body are trying to destroy the church. Now, to believe in this man's mind is no better than to believe in a leg that can be broken. To believe in the existence of that church, a church that needs protecting, is no better than to believe in the street accident. These two attempts at destruction have no force in themselves. They are merely two different external aspects of the fundamental lie, the beast and the false prophet, deriving their power exclusively from the dragon. As long as one spends his time mentally arguing with either of these two effects, he can do nothing, because they are only effects and not the cause of the trouble. Lay your axe at the root of the tree. The supposititious opposite seems to follow the truth exactly. What seems to be is patterned exactly after what is, and as one gets a clear understanding of what is, he gets a clear understanding also of the way the suppositional opposite seems to follow it, imitating it exactly. The reality is as follows. There is one cause, or mind. There is one effect, or idea. God is the one mind. I am the one effect. A proper synonym for what I call myself would be the awareness of God. There is nothing else to me. What I see around me, all the things I am conscious of as persons, places, things, governments, minds, etc., are the varying ways in which consciousness or God appears to me, taking the language I can best understand, but always appearing to me in a perfect and unlimited manner. This language appears as effect, as other ideas like myself. It is never effect. It is the presence of God appearing to me, consciousness appearing to that which is conscious only of it. Now, the imitation, the supposititious opposite, patterns itself exactly on this reality. It does not invent some new kind of arrangement for itself, but claims to appear in exactly the same way, as though the false creation were a shadow superimposed upon the real one and fitting it exactly. Of course, you understand this. There is no shadow. There is no superimposing. and there is certainly no creation, either imaginary or real, since God does not create, but spontaneously is. You know that this is true. It is as though the dragon, the supposititious lie which claims to wear the garments of truth, that is, to be true, came to you and said, I am cause, I am your mind, and you are my effect, conscious only of me. I appear to you in the limited, dying language that is suitable to me. This language appears to you as effect, as persons, places, things, governments, minds, etc. But it is never effect. It is my presence appearing to you. Now supposing, just to carry on the symbolism, the dragon could make a survey of the steps leading to its own destruction. Apparent destruction, of course. It is only an apparent dragon, after all. The steps might run something like this. I had you fooled for a long time. I made you think, when I appeared as effect, that it was a real world you were seeing, a world that was really made up of men that died and laws that killed, and an endless, unending round of birth and decay. Then you began to find out that it was not a real world, that it had no actual substance at all, that it was only a kind of hypnotic illusion, not solid reality, and that what was really occurring was something quite different. But still I had you. You wasted your strength by fighting not against me, but against the way I was appearing as effect. The reason you did this was because you did not understand the word consciousness. You thought, in a manner that was still theological rather than scientific, you thought that God was a creator, and he had made a perfect creation full of ideas, sons and daughters of God, made in his image, of which you were one out of many. You did not understand why Mrs. Eddy said, the Christian Scientist is alone with his own being and with the reality of things. You thought instead rather that there were a lot of consciousnesses reflecting God, instead of understanding that there was one consciousness appearing in infinity of variety, but always one. Now, because you did not really understand about this one, although you admitted it theoretically from the days of Moses onwards, you did not realize in a practical way that the suppositional opposite, me, was one also. You thought that my effects were the lies, death, destruction, limitation, etc. Not at all. I am the lie, the only lie. You can reverse the way I am appearing to you as effect all you please, but that will not reverse me. I will still go right along, calling myself your mind, and all the arguments you lavish on effects, so-called, although true in themselves, will not affect me in the least. But I am now badly frightened. Since you have discovered that what you have been calling creation is really God appearing to you, you have discovered also that the false creation is really only me appearing to you. You have taken me out of my hiding place. You are paying no more attention to my beast and my false prophet, all the physical and mental manifestations that are no more than the branches of a tree. You are laying your axe at the root. You are giving me your full attention and calling me by my real name, and I don't like it at all. I am in great anguish, knowing my time is short. Now, to drop the suppositional and get back to the real, what is the real name of what you have been calling evil? Obviously, the real name is God, since there is no other realness. The real name of death is life. The real name of a mistake is truth. Death could not be destroyed except by calling it by its real name. Neither could the dragon be destroyed except by ceasing to misunderstand it and by seeing it instead for what it really is. This obliterates what has been called dragon and leaves in its place what has always been there, the name God. Nothing is destroyed because there is nothing to destroy. Destruction is a kind of symbolism. What is done is to see it correctly, and because the awareness of God is all that there is to one, he cannot very well do anything else. The apparent warfare with the dragon is simply the finding of one's own identity with God, and it ends when the Christian Scientist is finally and practically able to call the dragon by its real name. Analysis of the appearing of malicious mental malpractice. The claim of malicious mental malpractice should be examined just as a claim of sickness is, to find out what is involved. As a belief of cells is involved in a case of cancer, a belief of tubercles in a case of pulmonary disease, and a belief of too much or too little sugar in a case of diabetes, so in analyzing malicious mental malpractice and its effects, it is necessary to understand how the claim seems to arise. Therefore, let us discuss again briefly the origin or basis of malicious mental malpractice. While this has been carefully analyzed from another angle in a previous article, nevertheless, the reiteration and amplification of important points should prove helpful and cannot be repeated too often. To begin with, evil appears in its cruder forms as isolated cases of suffering or wrongdoing. But because it is the negation of God, it must negate God at every point and in every respect. To the mortal advancing to a clearer sense of God, it necessarily seems to present an ascending scale of evil. In Science and Health, it is stated that Adam, evil, begins his reign over man somewhat mildly, but he increases in falsehood and his days become shorter. In other words, evil begins mildly, endeavoring, if possible, to hide its nature. Science and Health also states that the serpent, subtlety, evil, stands as the first lie of limitation. The supposition that God is not all, which of course accompanies any sense of finity or limitation, would necessarily be the first supposition. From that suppositional basis, the whole suppositional structure of evil or negation of God moves forward, always keeping pace in its unfoldment with the advancement of that which it negates. Thus, the divisions of evil, the beast and the false prophet, spontaneously appear, first as dead matter, which is the most inanimate, non-intelligent, an outwardly harmless form of evil. Second, in the more animate form, as living matter, appearing as both good and bad, whether as mortals or as things. Third, and lastly, as pure evil mentality, eliminating matter entirely, but again emerging in two forms, good and bad. The good masquerading as harmless in order to hide its real nature, but the bad appearing in its true nature as evil mentality. In this final appearing of evil as the false prophet, matter as such disappears, and mentality is seen to assume all power. At first, it appears mildly in its operation of mind control, promising to bring about the betterment of conditions through the action of one mind over another. For example, new thought, therapeutic suggestion, etc., etc. Finally, it surrenders all pretense of good and is found operating in the true nature of the dragon, the last infirmity of sin, as Science and Health points out, showing its real purpose and character as the suppositional opposite of divine mind, using mental means to produce every form of sin, sickness, distress, limitation, destruction, and finally, death, but also sinking its perpetrator into a night without a star. These last two phases of evil have been classified in Christian Science phraseology as ignorant or sympathetic mental malpractice and malicious mental malpractice. Whether appearing as animate or inanimate matter as the beast, or in its final form, a malicious mental malpractice as the false prophet, the whole of evil is animal magnetism, the dragon of Revelation. Science and Health declares that animal magnetism or hypnotism is the specific term for error or mortal mind. This name designates its animal or bestial nature and its mind operation or influence in contradistinction to the spiritual or holy nature of divine mind and its activities. It must never be forgotten that the nature of animal magnetism, whether appearing in its guileless forms of matter or in its more easily discerned and truer nature as destructive mentality, is always the same malicious mental malpractice, the son of perdition, the great dragon, that old serpent called the devil and Satan, which deceiveth the whole world, always ready to devour those who are not awake to its sinister nature and purpose, which is to bring about their death and destruction. Let us delve a little more analytically into this claim of evil as the negation of good. Evil, being a negation or supposition, purely a mental state, every conclusion drawn by it is a suppositional conclusion and never the fact, although it always appears in one of matter's various divisions. It must be remembered that matter is, as Mrs. Eddy calls it, a misstatement of mind, and a misstatement is a mind activity. As a result of the mental admission of limitation, matter appears as the evidence of limitation. Of finiteness, matter with all its so-called divisions and subdivisions, and with the entire theory of evolution, which is simply one belief added to another belief, borrowing from and claiming to reverse everything of God, the source of all being. In the end, it actually borrows or negates mind and operates as evil minds, capable of doing as evil everything that divine mind does as infinite good. Thus, it counterfeits God's presence, Christian Science practice and practitioner, with its malicious malpractice and malpractitioner. Every step of so-called evolution is a belief or mental step which must, in the end, be scientifically reversed and replaced with the truth. Notice how in belief, evil ensures the so-called increase of its mortals, as Science and Health points out, by the parent's mind through self-division, and builds up this self-division step by step until it calls its belief a new child. This child, in turn, is put through a series of further beliefs until it ends in that which it calls death, only, however, to find it is not really death, but merely a continuance of belief which goes on indefinitely until destroyed by spiritual understanding. In handling a case of disease, you do not ignore the various beliefs involved: anatomy, laws of matter, nature, materia medica, etc., but you take every one of them back to the kingdom of heaven by reversing them, and you there find them all, in their true sense, as the activity of God. You go on from there to discover that the real claim is a vicious mental determination on the part of evil to harass and finally destroy its victim through mental means, that is to say, through hypnotic suggestion. Now at last, you have cornered the lie and can correct it. In the realm of matter, through its various laws, evil builds up its claim by first creating sickness and finally death. in exactly the same pernicious manner, it builds up its claim of malicious mental malpractice. But instead of operating as matter and laws of matter, it now acts as mental laws, laws of wish, intent, rule, desire, influence, inclination, determination, and so forth. And just as it seems to act consistently and successfully in its laws of matter until destroyed by the law of mind, so in its realm of mentality, with its claim of mental influence, it is successful until met and mastered by the practice of Christian Science as intelligent mind action. This mastery is obtained just as it was in the case of evil so-called laws of matter. As you painstakingly destroyed each belief by taking it back to God and by rising to the true sense of being, so every law of malicious mental malpractice must be denied and its entire operation translated back to God. It was by reversing in belief the true sense and statement of Christian Science that malicious mental malpractice came actively into being. It began with one reversal of a scientific statement of truth, and from that it multiplied its lies until today it has gone entirely beyond matter into the realm of pure malicious mental malpractice. Mrs. Eddy tells in one of her early editions of Science and Health about the one so-called original malpractitioner, and says plainly that had it not been for this original one, there never would have been another. That is obviously true, because all being divine mind in reality and mortal mind in human belief, there could be no continuance if the original erroneous thought could be annihilated. Mind cannot duplicate its thought, and this applies equally to the negation, malicious mind. A disease begins with one person believing or expressing it, perhaps first the victim and then the doctor or nurse, or both begin to believe it, and unobserved, it spreads entirely beyond its origin and becomes a recognized belief of the human mind, losing its personal sense and becoming an impersonal claim of disease with its so-called laws and history. Therefore, the lie was and is collective as well as individual, as is stated in retrospection and introspection. In the same way, malicious mental malpractice started with what appeared as one person voicing its lies, but it afterwards was to be discerned wholly as an impersonal claim of evil. The original malpractizer appeared to accomplish his wickedness by reversing in belief the statements of truth. This reversal, which Christian Science designates as malicious mental malpractice, must be destroyed in exactly the same way sickness is destroyed. That is, by taking each lie or mental argument of law and reversing it with the truth. However, instead of handling the laws of matter as such, which are involved in a simple case of sickness, and which are, in one sense, harmless, you handle every claim of evil as a mentally directed belief operating as the so-called law of vicious minds. This law can be and must be as readily discerned and destroyed as the simple beliefs and laws of matter, nature, materia medica, etc. Malicious mental malpractice, with its malicious mental malpractitioner, can operate only as the negation of Christian Science practice and in no other way. The positive must always precede the suppositional opposite. Therefore, Christian Science had to be an operation before it was possible for mental malpractice to seem to appear. This fact should give a great sense of security and freedom to the Christian Scientist, for he realizes all he has to meet is the negative of what he already knows of Christian Science, Thus, he is forearmed and understands he can be brought into no condition, be it ever so severe, where love has not been before, as Mrs. Eddy says. Paul said, "When I was a child, I spake as a child, I understood as a child, I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things." So the Christian Scientist no longer looks through a glass darkly, but face to face. He is no longer a child in the realm of mind, but has reached man's estate, and he now sees clearly that every error confronting him is a mental lie deliberately directed. He no longer deals with the belief of material things. Malicious mental malpractice, as the highest form of evil, is the same impersonal ignorance that confronts a student in learning the simple multiplication table. The only difference is that the student of the multiplication table seems to be confronted with non-intelligent ignorance, whereas the student of Christian Science, in mastering malicious mental malpractice, seems to be confronted with intelligent ignorance, if such an absurd contradiction could be used. This intelligent ignorance seems to be willfully and maliciously imparted with the avowed purpose of keeping its victim ignorant. Even as Christian Science treatment is good, imparted with the avowed purpose of bringing to light good and more good intelligently directed, so evil, in its last analysis, is intelligently directed evil with the avowed purpose of bringing to pass evil and more evil. The former says, in the words of Christ Jesus, "I am come that they might have life, and that they might have it more abundantly." The latter, the reverse, "I am come that they might have death, and have it more abundantly." Mrs. Eddy illustrates with an analogy in Miscellany the two phases of evil, the beast and the false prophet, or as we term them today, matter and ignorant and malicious mentality, in these words. The alcoholic habit is the use of higher forms of matter wherewith to do evil, whereas animal magnetism is the highest form of mental evil wherewith to complete the sum total of sin. She thus expresses the difference between the ordinary claim of sickness and the vicious claim of the sickness that is the result of malicious mental manipulation. Both have to be destroyed by diligently reversing the laws operating in each case, one seemingly an ignorant law and the other a willful, malicious law, deliberately formulated with malice aforethought. No presentation in either case can be neglected if the problem is to be scientifically solved. The Christian Scientist lives and operates today in the realm of pure mind, and consequently has to meet the negation of that mind, just as the student of mathematics, when reaching the higher rules, has to meet the ignorance about those rules and not the simple ignorance that he met in his earlier studies of mathematics. So, as you, the Christian Scientist, the intelligent metaphysician, gain the understanding of the operation of intelligent good, you necessarily have to meet the belief of intelligent evil. This, however, involves only the same fidelity to principle which you expressed when first introduced to Christian Science. Unswerving consecration to what is true is imperative. The demand is no greater, the consecration no less, for in both cases the understanding is the use of what is true. You must have the same supreme confidence in what is true as you have in God. It is absurd for the advanced Christian Scientist to think he can use the simple arguments and understanding he used when first becoming interested in Christian Science. He cannot. He must practice his advanced understanding just as he would in any other study. Mrs. Eddy stressed this very point when she said to a student, "Keep your thoughts clear to work and protect it from mental psychic malpractice rather than struggle with the physical ravages of the influence and manifestation. The Christian Scientist must go on to more advanced rules continually, and unless he recognizes this fact and joyfully keeps step with the advancing unfoldment, he is not only waiting for a more convenient season, but when that more convenient season appears, he will discover his lack of progress and will have to take every step he has heretofore neglected. How much easier it is to enjoy the present moment's unfoldment and go forward happily. As Science and Health points out, willingness to become as a little child and to leave the old for the new renders thought receptive of the advanced idea.